Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unspooled
Top 3.
I'm Amy Nicholson.
And I am Paul Scheer. And this is our bonus Unspooled series where we sit down with great actors, writers, filmmakers to talk about three films that mean a lot to them. We've been talking about taking 100 films to space to save, to show the scope of the best in cinema. And we throw that to our guests and we say, you know, what are your three films that you would want to save, the ones that affected you the most? They don't have to be the best, but they're important to you. And I can't begin to tell you how excited I am to have our guest today. I mean, this is one of my favorite actors. He's so fantastic. You know him from Out of Sight, Rescue Dawn, War for the Planet of the Apes, Treme,
Reality Bites.
Reality Bites. Oh my gosh. I mean, good Lord Bird, he has been in so many great films and television shows. Just one of my favorite actors, Steve Zahn, who is in a show right now. Amy, have you been watching any of White Lotus?
I am about to. That is my plan for this weekend, is to start like buckling into my seat and getting ready.
If you don't know, White Lotus is a new Mike White show. And Mike White is, again, another one of my favorite directors who just is always like, I feel like he and Noah Baumbach both scratch itches I don't know I have in cinema, where I'm like, oh, I've never seen that kind of conversation done before. Like it feels so fresh to me.
I adore Mike White. I feel like he has X-ray glasses that penetrate into the human soul. And the more he does that, people are like, holy shit, Mike White is incredible. The more I'm like, yes, and please go back and watch the 2017 Ben Stiller film, Brad Status, movie that I feel like only I have seen and love, and I want everybody to watch it, written and directed by Mike White.
I 100% agree with you. I mean, and then if you don't know Mike White, you would know these other things that he's been involved with. School of Rock, Enlightened. It is
Chuck and Buck, Nacho
and
Libre.
Buck. Oh, Nacho Libre. So many great things. And this new show, White Lotus, is fantastic. The cast is amazing. You have Jennifer Coolidge and Molly Shannon and Connie Britton. So many great people in it. And Steve, and I love Steve's character in this. But without any further ado, let's welcome Steve to the show. Steve, I love White Lotus. I mean, it really has everything. It's a thriller. It's a comedy. It has these moments in it that just shake you. I mean, to your soul, because like, oh, it's so uncomfortable. And I can't wait for more of them to come out. I've only seen the first two, but what's been your experience, you know, shooting it and then actually being in it? Because I feel like I'm at the edge of my seat, like I'm watching, you know, like an action movie.
Yeah, it's very cringy. I did the thing, and when they would send me like two, and I watched the first two, and I watched it like I wasn't in it. I'm like, right. Oh. It's like, Mike, this is amazing. Yeah. Can you send 3, 4? No, not yet. I'm like, oh my gosh. When you're doing, you know, when you're on a great gig, you know it's special and you know it's going to be quality or whatever. But it's another thing when you watch it and it's beyond what, you know, I wasn't hanging out on everybody else's scenes when they were
shooting.
I was in my world. So it's one of the better things I've been a part of. I'm really excited about it. It's really good.
Mike White is one of my favorite brains. So I love just anything that comes out of his mind. Like, what is it like being around his brain in person as an actor? Like, what can you tell about the way that his mind works?
He's a master at this craft. And I can't say that about many people. I mean, but he's so humble and funny and easygoing that puts you at ease. His directing is as good as his writing, and his writing is as good as it gets. He's very simple. His direction is 3 words, not 6 paragraphs.
Right.
And it's always, and you can tell, like, I've worked with directors before where you go like, oh, this director really wants me to be here. It wasn't like I was part of a, you know, there was a bunch of names and people were fighting for different, you know,
right.
You really feel valued with Mike. You really feel valued and necessary when you work with Steven Soderbergh or Richard Linklater. Like Fred and I, because of the situation, we were in this bubble, right? Fred would come to my room and we would rehearse our scenes because we had so many scenes together. We would rehearse them like we were doing a play. And Mike kind of, in a weird way, there's scenes that are 5 minutes long, you know, it's kind of written like a play. And Fred and I would work on these. We had so many opinions. We were like, no, this is the way. We'd go shoot it. And Mike would just make a couple tweaks. And Fred and I would play it a completely opposite way that we had worked on it for the past month. It was really a fun gig.
And I think what I love about it too is it's adult, right? It's like there's so few things that feel like this is like it feels like these 70s films. I just watched the Long Goodbye the other day, like the Robert Altman, Elliot Gould movie, and it's like oh, this is like an adult. Like there's just like this is for adults about adults, and I think that there's such great stuff in here. But like the cringe stuff to me is always like not cringy and like oh I'm grossed out, but cringy and like the uncomfortable moments and conversations there. Like, I imagine that in doing those scenes too, you have to not overdo it either, because it feels like the moments are being captured. They're you don't want to like make it seem too sketch, right? Because it feels so real. And when you're watching it, I think you recognize those moments. I mean, that's at least how I feel when I watch it.
Yeah, Mike was just, he was just like, I just want you to be real. Just be real. I don't care if you say the exact words, just make it real. Oh, the script, that great. The tone is there. Everybody knows what they're doing. There's no conversations about like, well, I don't know if my guy's like this or that. You know what road you're on. I know what road Connie's on. I know what road Jake is on. And then it's fun, man. Then you can explore like dinner scenes. Oh my God, dinner scenes suck, right? Sitting doing a dinner scene. Oh my God, we're gonna be doing this for 12 hours.
Jeez,
those dinner scenes were so much fun because they were just, you know, we could explore and it was the subtleties and those things. It was just really fun.
I love it. I know that you made a lot of headlines, obviously, because there's a part of you that was seen that's not your part, right? There's a penis out and about, but it was, I read that as, but it was not, it was a stunt penis and it was a stunt. Was it a whole fully stunt person or was it just a prosthetic?
Stunt junk.
Stunt junk. Got it.
Yeah. It was a fake Johnson. It was a prosthetic Johnson on somebody else.
We on Black Monday, we brought in a guy just to be a penis double and was hanging out with us. And it was the weirdest thing because he's keeping himself at a level to be on camera and but also just shooting the shit, you know, and then
hold on. All right. What were you saying?
And just to be brought in for that in the same costume as one of our main characters to be shot from the waist down. It was one of the most insane days. And I was like,
how does somebody like that get cast? Do they beat out other people for the part?
I think there's an avenue that you go down where people may want to do that and jump into that world. And the person that we did ask to do that did ask us if we could crash at our house because he needed to. He didn't have a place to stay that night. So that was an interesting moment. You know, just talking about this, like, realism. White Lotus is not gritty in the way it looks, but it is, like, I feel like it gets to these relationships that are a little bit more uncomfortable and real. I wanted to talk about these movies that you wanted to blast off into outer space to save. The best movies, the movies that you love the most. And Amy, why don't you bring us into, you maybe set the stage a little bit.
I will. And I think the first thing I want to ask is, like, when you send us your list of movies, I suddenly felt like, aha, I have a real insight into your soul. You picked three movies. They all come out in the span of 5 years. You weren't really conscious for these years. You were like a baby when they start coming out. These movies are all from like 1968 to 1973. And I want to ask, just as like an opening question, how did you get into like the movies of the late like 60s and 70s? Like when in your life were you introduced to them?
I think I was pretty young, you know. I mean, I was kind of an interesting kid. I mean, a big history buff. You know, I remember watching like these epic Westerns with my dad. You know, I remember going to the theater to see Midway. You know, he worked on the university on Friday nights. He'd bring home a projector and we'd watch Laurel and Hardy movies.
Oh, wow.
That was our Friday nights. And these are movies that. This is before I knew the strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
These are the stories where I believed it, where I the trick worked.
Right.
And in movies now, you know, it spoils it somewhat when you're as somebody, you know, the more experienced you get, you know, the more I want to pick up a book and read. So if I watch a movie, it's like listening to an album, you know?
Yeah.
I want to watch Once Upon a Time in the West.
Once Upon a Time in the West. It is one of the epic spaghetti westerns directed by Sergio Leone. It comes out in 1968, and it stars a man we have talked about with great rapture in here as America's hero, Henry Fonda. You know, we, of course, from 12 Angry Men, Grapes of Wrath, here being the villain who is trying to dominate all of the water rights in a small town, and thus must battle Charles Bronson and Jason Robards and Claudia Cardinale, and he must do it all to a score by Ennio Morricone.
The pipes are calling. And all the roses fall.
What is it about that movie? Yeah. Why is that movie on your list?
Brilliant movie. I mean, it's the script had to be like 20 pages long. You know, I think Sergio Leone, he's a master at like, which is strange. This is Italian guy who's a master at telling the American myth, you know?
Yeah.
The story that's retold over and over again. Why do we like Westerns? Why does the world like Westerns? You know, it's the same story, basically. And he constructs it like he's doing an opera. I mean, every character has their own score, you know, and every shot, it's either these epic, just takes all day to figure out how to do it like that. There's a shot in there that pans where she comes, you know, she comes to the at the beginning of the movie, and she arrives at the station and it kind of goes, and then there's no one there to pick her up. And then she goes through the building and she walks out, and then the camera goes up and you go above the building, and it just reveals this town being built by, you know, there's like 500 people and horses. And I'm like, talk about now we just go, just shoot a bunch of stuff and we'll figure it out in post.
And it will all be CGI too, right? It will just be like, we can build out a giant city. And you're right. There's something like really like real about this. And I feel like that all the time. Like when you see actual buildings, real puppets, or, you know, creatures that you can identify with, not just like these big CGI things that just feel so wide and so vast and not, you know, this seems like just giant crowd scenes. But I'll say that this is an interesting movie because Leone kind of effectively retires from making Westerns and then is kind of pulled back in to make this. So I feel like in a way this is his swan song to do everything. Like there had to be a reason for him to come back, you know, besides just the money. But yeah, I feel like this movie definitely feels like what you're saying, this opera that's very different than the spaghetti Westerns that I think that most people recognize him for. Right.
Yeah. It's very different.
Yeah.
I mean, just the first 10 minutes of that movie is just brilliant. I mean, it's just brilliant. There's not a word spoken. There's one guy that talks and he's like the old guy. That'll be me in like 25 years going like, you know, and everything is dubbed. It's all looped. Right. The whole movie is another insane thing.
Well, now, I guess the other thing about it, too, is like this movie is a flop when it comes out. And you know, and then it kind of grows back. And we always are talking about this and we can't quite figure it out and wanted to know if you have any opinions on this as well. Like, what do you think it is where a movie like this is not getting recognized in the moment? Is it just because it's ahead of its time or people were they had their own preconceived notions? But this is one that's really interesting because you feel like, oh, we're going to go see a Sergio Leone movie. Here we go. I mean, it's long, but I don't think that that's the reason why it falls. I don't think that's the reason why it's a flop when it comes out.
Yeah, it's very interesting how something comes out and it's new and we need to say something about it right now. And there's no, you know, we're going to review this in 3 years once it sinks into everybody's, you know, I don't know if it's that weak.
Yeah.
You know, if it's compared to something else that came out that we're not even thinking about a month before or, you know, there's a political thing going on. I don't know.
I think that does happen all the time as a critic. I feel like I see that happen all the time. Like one movie comes out that's vaguely similar to another movie in the course of one summer. And you're like, I'm so sick of this cliche. And the second film never gets the fair shake. We talked about this earlier on this first season of the show, but when The Wizard of Oz came out, everybody just thought it was a Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs clone. And like, we'd never think of that today. But at the time, every critic was grumbling about it. Like you got your little things and you got people singing and it was just to them the same movie. It was just a ripoff.
Yeah. It's like in more recent, like, you know, Saving Private Ryan comes out and then, you know, Thin Red Line comes out.
Right.
And it's like, oh, yeah, yet another World War II. And Thin Red Line is, I think, a brilliant movie. I mean,
yeah.
I love that.
Oh, it's, I think the people who raise it up are the people who, or the reason why it gets raised up is because it's always good. And then you get people who can, I don't know, just watch it and be true fans of it with, like, maybe, I don't even know how to say it, like, the context of the moment is really just a difficult thing to predict. I mean, we talked about this with, I love that movie, that Tom Cruise movie that came out, like Live, Die, Repeat, which is like this, his Groundhog Day in a futuristic world. It's got like 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, but then no one saw it. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh, no, everyone loves this movie. But it's like, it's weird what, I guess, preconceived notions can do or the way that you go in. I've been in good things that have flopped and I've been in bad things that have done good. So it's, yeah, you never, there's no alchemy.
I mean, I just saw a thing like, it was like Saving Silverman, like panned in Rotten Tomatoes. It's like, you know, the trash can with the crap coming out of it. And yet I get recognized by that movie more than anything. And people going like, oh, I love that movie. It's so funny. You're like, you know, it was a big flop. That thing you do, big flop. I mean, it didn't do well. It wasn't number one movie of the weekend.
Right.
I don't even know which one was, but you
but
know,
there you great. Are. Like, and then, but then you see like in during the pandemic, like, you know, like people, like I felt like that movie in a real big way, like That Thing You Do really has had this like real renaissance to it. I feel like people have found it. And I think that that's maybe the cool thing about film. And we're talking about this idea of like making sure that you go backwards and find things and look at things. Cause it may be the movie that you fall in love with that isn't the most popular one. It isn't the Citizen Kane or the Godfather. And I feel like that's when you find those movies, it's so exciting because it feels like you found a new movie.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
But I think that this leads really well to our next film, Jeremiah Johnson, because, well, first, Jeremiah Johnson. This is a movie that I think is known right now at this moment in popular culture as a meme. It's just known as a meme, as that picture right. of a guy looking over his shoulder.
Robert Redford,
he's Bigfoot.
Jeremiah Johnson is a 1972 American Western film directed by Sidney Pollack and starring Robert Redford as a title character and Will Gear as Bear Claw. It is based partly on the life of the legendary mountain man John Jeremiah Johnson, recounted in Raymond Thorpe and Robert Bunker's book Crow Killer, The Saga of the Liver-Eating Johnson, and Vardis Fisher's novel Mountain Man. The tagline, a man of peace driven wild.
I ain't seen a live man in 2 months.
I am Bear Claw Chris Lapp, blood kin to the grizzler that bit Jim Bridger's ass. You are molesting my hunt.
And I am Jeremiah.
I know who you are. You're the same dumb pilgrim I've been hearing for 20 days and smelling for three.
For people who only know this movie as a meme, what is this movie? How different is it from this meme? Does this meme capture anything essential about this film?
I think it's not a perfect movie by any means, you know?
Right.
But I think one of the reasons I love it so much is I remember hearing after I love that movie, but how hard it was to make. It took forever. No one would do it.
Right.
And maybe at the time it was like, oh, those are out now. You know, we don't want to see a guy in the woods anymore, you know.
But, right.
And then he ended up shooting it on his own property. And, you know, I actually heard about the story from a friend of mine who knew Redford and asked him about it. And he said that the movie came out. I'm kind of sidetracking, but the movie came out and it was just like, you know, whatever. And then like a year later, friends of his that were up like Massachusetts called him and said, hey, love your movie. And he was like, what do you mean you love my what movie? He was like, we just saw it, Jeremiah Johnson. It's great. It's like, well, how'd you see it? And apparently a print was at like a theater, like a small theater. And they just played it. And people started liking it. He was like, I want the number. And he called the place and he was like, are you showing my movie? He's like, yeah, it's a big hit.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was like a year later. And that's, I mean, I got a good source.
I love that. And I was thinking about this movie with The Revenant. Like, you know, it's like they're very similar films. I think that Jeremiah Johnson is well, I don't want to say better, but there's a lot of similarities that are really interesting about like wanting to make this movie, going out the very solid. There's a lot of solitude to it. But it's if you like The Revenant, I think you should definitely watch Jeremiah Johnson.
I think it's a little more poetic. It's a little more, you know, mythical.
Yes.
Jeremiah Johnson, right? I like that about it. And I like things that slow down and where, you know, the environment is as much of a character as anything. Like, you know, Never Cry Wolf. What a great movie. That's kind of similar in a weird way, you know?
Yeah.
That's a great one for kids, by the way. I remember when I showed my kid that movie, they were just freaked.
I gotta put that on.
Well, it also makes me think, I mean, speaking about movies where like nature is a character, it makes me think of you in Making Rescue Dawn, you know, yeah. A film that's all about like men and wilderness and survival and
survival. And, you know, the jungle's evil. And how do we get out of a prison camp? But then after that, how do we survive the real prison, which is this jungle? That's why I love this movie I did a couple of years ago called Cowboys. It was up in Montana, and it was, you know, me and my kid on a horseback to, you know, running away from the FBI.
Well, I gotta check that out. I was gonna say, like, you know, talking about like how the terrain plays a big part in this movie, I just want to bring it back to White Lotus for one second and be like, what is it like to shoot in a place that is a resort, that is made for relaxation, right? I think a lot of the times, you know, we're seeing all these amazing places and films and very, you know, and when you go to a resort, like, are you able to, is that a tricky thing? Because it, did your body just connect to, I need to relax now, I'm in a nice hotel, I'm in this thing? Yeah. Or like, because I imagine there must be a little bit of there's a push-pull there, I guess, right? Because you're not used to it. Like, yeah, you know.
But it was closed.
Okay.
So it's like you're there going like, well, I'm going to be eating for the next 2 months. Like, and then you're getting boxed lunches brought in.
Going, okay. Wait a
second. You know, and this is canned fruit. We're in Hawaii. What's going on? You know, and then after you stay somewhere for more than like 2 weeks, you go, you know, you go into your suite. And if you're just spending a week there, you're like, look at this couch.
Right.
But if you were given that couch, you would go, well, this is going to Goodwill.
Right. It is true. Like every hotel room looks so amazing until you were like by day four, you're like, okay, this chair is uncomfortable. Like, why am I?
Died and you inherited her couch. Like, I don't want this shit.
I just want to be able to watch TV without seeing Mario Lopez pop on telling me all the new movies that are on pay-per-view. I just let's move into our last movie, which is one of my favorites too, which is The Last Detail.
The Last Detail is a 1973 movie that is written by Robert Town right before he did Chinatown, and is directed by the one and only Hal Ashby. It is about three sailors, Jack Nicholson, Otis Young, and Randy Quaid. Jack Nicholson and Otis Young have been tasked to take young Randy Quaid, who is only 18 years old, to prison. And if they don't take him across to be locked up into the brig for 8 years, they themselves will be kicked out of the Navy. So they decide on this road trip to 8 years of imprisonment, they're going to show this 18-year-old kid the time of his life. And the movie definitely looks like three guys having the time of their life as they start to chafe against the constrictions of the military.
The law says I have to serve him and says I can't.
I'll tell you what
him.
You better do, Mr. Citizen Bartender. You take your beers and ram them up your ass sideways.
Whoa there, sunshine. We're going so you can take your hand off that horse cock you got stashed under the bar.
Now, this movie, I imagine, well, I mean, when did you see this? Like, how did this movie come into your life?
I think I saw this. I don't know when I saw this, but it wasn't early. It was later. I kind of discovered it.
Okay.
Maybe it was like browsing through like Blockbuster kind
right.
of thing. You know, and it just blew my brains. I mean, I was like, as an actor watching this going, oh my God, they had so much fun. Why can't we do this now? Why can't we just set up a camera in a room? Why do we have to cover?
Right.
Two people in a shot, like drunk in a hotel room doing Semaphore, like, you know, in front of a TV. Hey man, you're in front of the TV. That was so real and so tangible. And that drunk scene in the parking lot where they're trying to figure out if their game is like, they are truly like drunk. Randy Quaid is drunk.
Well, I feel like this movie, like, and that's like the kind of the stuff that I love. And, you know, and I think there's moments when you see movies in this era where it seems like you're doing it, but you're not actually creating anything good. But this is a movie where I feel like, okay, they're pushing the limits. Like I always knew that this movie is supposed to be a very dirty movie. When you watch it now, it doesn't even register really as dirty, but it was like the most curses of all time when it was released. And, you know, but it seems like these are like bad, like this is like there's a sense of also these are wild guys, right? It's like, this is Jack Nicholson. This is like, you see, like, Randy Quaid is kind of an, I think at this point, not known.
Robert Town wrote it. So it's not like just, they just turn the camera on and let him get drunk. It's a beautifully written script. It follows three people, you know, it's very kind of a micro, you know, and yet it says something greater about that. Our time, you know, post Vietnam, you know, like no one wanted to join the army. It was just kind of like a, you know, and it really represents that well, like this kind of like, it's so funny to me. I laughed so hard watching that movie.
I mean, that really leapt out to me that I feel like your three picks are all movies about people fighting over what the soul of America should be. You know, like your two Westerns of people figuring out like where do loyalties lie in this world or what is the right thing to do in a country that's really lawless. And then Last Detail comes out in a world with laws that people are wondering whether or not they should obey, like a structure that makes no sense to them anymore.
These movies seem to be more present at a time when people, I think we're also right now in a time where I think people are questioning a lot of things about how we want to live, how we want to, you know, how we want to be. And we, I don't think go this deep that much. You know, I mean, I think you get it in more like smaller films. And I guess these films feel so big, like the budgets were big and they were conquering, like, or they were talking about big issues. And I, that's at least what I feel like sometimes when I watch these movies from something that's like, wow, you could make a big budget movie that actually has some like real introspective qualities and talks about things that don't really have an answer. And it's not really like beautifully wrapped up, but it's, it made you think as long as well as enjoying the film. And I feel like that's such a, sometimes a rare thing that,
you know, if you don't adhere to characters and you don't feel anything, I don't care how slick and how thought out your film is, it just doesn't resonate as much, at least with me. And so as an actor, that's the one thing, whether I'm in some crazy comedy or something's, you know, completely opposite to that. Where, how can I be vulnerable here? How can I let people in? You know, and you know, those are the movies that work. And that's the first thing that has to happen. Then concentrate on the other. I you gotta let me just like read off.
Please.
You know, I was mowing.
Yeah.
I was mowing and thinking about yesterday, thinking about what were the other movies? And I was like, Tender Mercies.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah.
The Godfather, American movie.
I'm so glad you bring up American movie. American movie to me, it's amazing.
All That Jazz and The Graduate. Those are my other ones.
We just talked about All That Jazz on another one of these episodes. One of our guys.
One of the greatest directors of all time, Robert.
Yeah. American movie to me is really interesting because it's a documentary about someone making a movie, and there's so much about that, again, about like this idea of like entrepreneurship, creativity, like this want, this desire. Like there is something where, yes, it's a very funny movie, but also at the core of it, at the root of it, it is about like creation and passion and like uniting this town, even though the, you know, Coven is such a bizarre package to put it all in. There is something about it that feels so, I know, inspirational, you know, and I that movie, if you've not seen it, you have to check out.
It's so beautiful. It's so moving where you don't even expect it. It's so funny. Oh my God. And it just represents that, God, just like perseverance and like, man. And they're real people, you know?
Yeah.
These are real character.
I love that.
It's a great film.
Is it fair to say that of the three picks that you presented here, that these are all movies you could imagine yourself being in, that you'd want to play a part in? I mean, is that a thing you do when you watch movies? Do you think like, who would I want to play or how would I play that?
Yeah. And that's odd. You know, as a kid, I'm a huge history buff. Like, I'm the guy that buys the book and goes in the battlefield and sits on the rock and sits there all day, reads the whole book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was right there. I'm that guy. I live on a farm. I take care of my horses and goats and yet I'm kind of thought of, in a weird way, as this kind of comedic, you know, kind of crazy, you know, pothead, you know, for years. And I was always kind of amazed by that. Like, oh, wow. oh, I'm that guy. And really how I see myself is playing, you know, in Tender Mercies or in Jeremiah Johnson or like, you know, those yeah. movies that make me.
Well, I mean, you know, it's so funny how we all view ourselves because it's like, I feel like you have one of the best careers because it really spans so many different, like they're very broad comedies. They're amazing dramas. They're like these great character pieces. Like everything that you do seems very thought out and kind of wonderful. But I think it is that idea too, where it's like, how do you challenge yourself not to do the same thing over and over again? Like you were talking about Saving Silverman. You could probably just be like, oh, I'm going to do, you could, there's a world in which you just did only like these like tentpole big comedies. And you're like, and there, and you see people like that just kind of go off there, but it's like you've always tried these different things. And I don't know, I think it's the reason why, and that whole cast of White Lotus too, is like some people know him for some very big, funny things, but also can bring the drama in these moments. It makes it, I think that's what makes that show actually so engaging, is the casting of it. It's really, really awesome.
I agree. I mean, Jennifer,
yeah.
She's phenomenal on the show.
You know, I love Connie and Molly Shannon and Natasha. Like they're all so
yeah,
good.
Natasha's brilliant. Everybody's just great.
Thanks again to Steve for being here. That was a great list and a great conversation.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.